You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
No, not a man, not a human being. I'm a complex space-time event. I am Lord President of Gallifrey, the traveler from beyond time. I am the Sandman, the oncoming storm. I am the Kar-Farak Gatri, destroyer of worlds. And sometimes, only sometimes, I am your worst nightmare. I'm the Doctor, and I take care of my friends.
Welcome to The Oncoming Storm, your podcast about the Doctor Who you won't see on television. Featuring Josh Wilson, Ashley Rayburn, Rachel Stewart, and Jeff Polier. From books, audios, comics, and beyond, we're your source for all things Doctor Who spin-off media. And we're back in 2017. Welcome everyone to episode 190 of The Oncoming Storm, your Doctor Who spin-off media podcast. We talk about everything Doctor Who that you will not see on television. I am one of your hosts, Josh Wilson, and I hope everybody is well rested from the Christmas holidays. And back to talk a little bit about Doctor Who, and I am, as always, joined by my cohorts in crime here, Ashley Rayburn, Jeff Polier, and Rachel Stewart. How's everybody doing, folks? Welcome back.
Yeah, I can't believe you're...
Yeah, it's New Year, first of all, but I can't believe we're 190 episodes into this. 190. That's unreal. You know, I wonder if we're at 190 episodes in the Shazam world.
I'm going to ignore any and all reference to that nonsense.
Oh, your wish is granted, Master.
Anyway, Happy New Year,
folks. I'm just saying, we might be further along. The Ashley in that world might be a lot better.
I feel like we're still on the bad timeline because I'm sick. I mean, 2016 is over, thank God, but God knows what's going to happen this year.
Well, since we all met last, I broke a rib.
What? How did I miss that?
Well, I don't post on Facebook anymore.
And how did I just get that high pitch? That's the real question here.
It was the genie's magic, Ashley.
I think so. Not just genie's magic, Sinbad's magic.
So wrong.
No, I slipped on ice. Apparently I can drive on the stuff, but I can't walk on it.
Oh my God.
You have a lot more experience with that than we do, and it's crazy down here.
Oh, it's been a winter horror land up here in Portland.
But you had a super mild summer, didn't you?
Fairly mild summer, and it's been a really cold winter. when I picked Anita up from school, we had a light snowfall. Right now it's just rain, but it's supposed to be snow again tonight and tomorrow.
Yeah, the great thing is if you lived in the South and you're like light snowfall in school, they'd be like, yeah, none of that.
Well, we did lose some school days last week, but it was actual ice.
Right.
We had freezing rain. It was really nasty.
Well, that's the worst, man. I didn't know that. I'm sorry that I didn't. Well, I mean, there's no way for me to know that, but I'm sorry that you took a rib.
Yeah, that was uncomfortable. It's just too bad I didn't land on my head. I wouldn't have heard anything.
We're lucky in this world. In another world, there's a genie that could just probably undo that.
Yep.
Well, if only. If only.
The worst part is that kept me from seeing Star Wars.
Oh.
Oh, no.
Because.
Have you seen it now, though, right?
I have not.
Oh.
What?
I was supposed to see it. That was, I broke it the Thursday of opening weekend. And I was supposed to see it Saturday. And the rest of the family ended up going without me.
Dope.
Because I was at home, doped up and in pain.
What does that say about us? That we were like kind of upset that you broke a rib, but we were really upset that you had to see Star Wars.
that is the more serious offense.
I'm sure you have plans though, right?
I'm hoping to go next Tuesday while the kids are at school and the Jennifers are at work.
Oh, man, that's I'm really sorry about that. Like, I'm way more sorry about that than the rib thing.
Yeah, that is a poor situation there, Jeff. I feel bad for you, in all counts. Star Wars and rib. All right. So, we've got a lot to do. Funnily enough, there seems to have been a ton of news that came out over the holidays, which surprised me a little bit. So we got a large news section to get through. But before that, we have a little news, at least as far as the podcast is concerned. We're now in 2017, and that is it's going to be a big deal for us here at the Oncoming Storm. It'll see our 5-year anniversary. It'll see our 200th episode. So some big milestones, and it will also see us coming to the end of the Virgin New Adventures by the end of the year. And that kind of brings us full circle to the impetus of this podcast, which is I wanted to talk about the new adventures, and I found people to do that with. But as things go, 5 years is no short amount of time in the lifespan of an individual and in a podcast, especially. I don't know how many podcasts have stuck around. I mean, lots do, but there is awfully a lot of podcast fade that happens. Podcasts just kind of disappear; they never come back, and. We are all at different points in our life. Ashley, especially, he is in a very different position of where he started from. So we've kind of jointly come to the decision that this will be the final year of the Oncoming Storm, or at least as you know it. Once we get done with the new adventures, and that will probably take us to around November or so. And then I think we're going to do a final wrap-up episode, just kind of a retrospective on the new adventures as a whole, kind of as our like last episode or so. And, we'll continue on to doing what we're doing, one book a month, and then the other episode of the month will be our selections of audios. So this is your chance. If there's anything you are dying to hear us talk about audio-wise, let us know before the year is out so that we can slot that in perhaps for you. But otherwise, once we finish with the new adventures, we're going to go on hiatus for an unspecified amount of time. I don't know if we'll be back or what form we'll be back or if we'll just get the itch. It's a little, I don't know. It's just what it is there's only so much time in the day to do stuff. And I've got like 50 different hobbies all pull me in the different directions. And I've got a kid who's now 8 and I should be spending more time teaching him to do things like baseball and getting him out of the house more often.
Watch your mouth.
And, it's just not that doing this podcast takes a lot of time out of the day, but I've got a huge stack of books that I've been buying over the last 5 years, and my reading time isn't exactly what it used to be. And I spend a good chunk of that taking the time to reread Doctor Who books, which I love doing because they're some of my favorite things ever. But like I said, I've got quite the backlog I would like to work on at some point in time. And just take a break. It's not that it feels like we have work to do when we do this, because we have a great time when we get on here and do this, but it does feel like, oh my God, the pressure, I've got to make sure to get this listened to by this date and read this read by this date. I mean, and I know everybody else here can feel that pressure at times, and it's, you know, it can make it not as fun as it should be. I think I can speak for everybody where it's just like, just feeling that pressure. So we'll take a little bit of break. And if we come back, it probably won't be on the same rigid schedule that we have now. just maybe when the, you know, the impetus calls to us, and we feel like we have something that we want to say, maybe we'll get together and do a random episode now and again. But we just wanted to make that announcement and put that out there. So,
but I think for at least me, I actually have as good of a time talking about the news and those kinds of things. And I know we enjoy kind of commentating on those kinds of things. So, you know, that might be something we do. We all, at least I think I can speak for myself and Josh, and I think Rachel and Jeff as well.
Yeah, what's his name?
Well, yeah, you know, that guy that's been talking to us for the last 2 years or three or however many, I've lost track. But we all enjoy doing this, and we would all like to continue doing it possibly in some way. But it is intense. It really does get intense. And, we want to, we tell each other in our, chats and things that this is, that we really do enjoy doing this. It's a time that we get to, we're spending it with friends, really, and we enjoy doing that, and we happen to be talking about Doctor Who, which is something we all love to do. If we can do that in a way that we can do it and make it work for us, then we will continue doing that. So if you guys have ideas, we're definitely, we can't guarantee you we will take them, but we definitely want to hear them. If you have...
we're open ideas, to suggestion.
Right, exactly. Formats and things like that. We'd love to hear it. We you guys as the listeners have been such a huge part of this. I mean, Jeff started out as a listener, and mm-hmm. we appreciate that. And he kind of came in and became a huge part of the show. And so that's really important to us. If you have ideas, let us know, and we would be glad to listen to those and entertain those.
Well, I mean, for me, I'm over editing the stupid podcast together. Over it. We record on Tuesdays. The reason we do that is because I have Wednesdays off every other week, and I used to spend my entire day off editing this stupid thing, editing out every single little bit and piece and putting it together. And it was great when we first started. I mean, it was a passion, a real thing of love, but after doing it for 5 years, it's like, oh my God, there's so many other things I'd rather be doing on my day off rather than sitting in front of a computer, taken out every single time somebody says or Ashley coughs or something along those lines. It is so tedious, and I'm sure if anybody ever wanted to compare, you could notice how much slacker I've become about doing it as time has progressed. But I'm ready to take a break on that end. I'm being completely honest, and I do apologize if it doesn't sound anywhere near as professional as what it could. I've got to do other things with my time off.
Well, and I mean, like, life and fandom, from what I've found, is, it's weird. Like, it's like, I feel like there's like a bell-shaped curve to it. And I, you know, I've been doing this. I've been doing my blog, you know, my much abandoned blog that, like, I was doing my WordPress. And then I have my column that I do for Nuga, and, you know, I've got other freelance clients. I got a full-time job. It's like, when does Rachel sleep? Rachel doesn't sleep, y'all. She just like lives on tea and like insanity mostly. But so, and like, and y'all got kids, and it just, I don't know. I think it feels natural. And I think you should always do what feels natural and not try to force things. So I'm here for the ride, and we'll just get together and discuss River Song whenever she pops back up.
Well, I mean, it's, we're sitting here sounding like it's like we're giving a eulogy for the podcast. I mean, we still got a whole year to go. But this is
my only friend.
So, I mean,
the moment's been prepared for.
Right. I mean, there's still lots of time left to get sick of us and be done with us by the time we get to the end. So, let's not dwell on that, because like I said, we still got lots of time ahead of us together.
I've got plenty of time to get crazy cynical. And I'm gonna, because I've already got my picks laid out.
Oh, boy. All right, so let's move on from that. Well, I'm sure we'll come back to that at points in time in the future, but we just want to let everybody give a heads up, so it's just not like we just disappear one day. We are planning on this, and hope you stick with us for the rest of the year. We've got some exciting things to talk about over this upcoming year, so hopefully you'll stick with us. But less enough of that. We've got so much news to talk about, so let's not take any longer, or else we'll be here all night. And let's dig into the news, and we're going to start off with the Classic Doctor's new monsters news that just came out this past week. Now, we've already had the announcements that we're going to have a Sixth Doctor story in the set, which is, who is he with? I don't even remember. But I know that there is a Fourth Doctor story with the Vashta Narada. And the reason I know this is because there's going to be a second story in this box set with the Vashta Narada, which I was already hesitant about to begin with. And now they're doubling up on it with a Paul McGann story, which also will feature Jacqueline Pierce as Cardinal Oresta in it. From the nice. War Doctor set. So, I mean, that's nice. She's going to be in the upcoming last part of Doom Coalition, too. So, nice. Get a couple of stories with her and the Eighth Doctor. And I'm guessing it's kind of going to be a bookend piece with the other one. This one is taking place during the Time War for the Eighth Doctor, as he stumbles across a space station being used for nefarious purposes by his own people. Alestra is sponsoring research to weaponize some already lethal creatures, but scientists have unwittingly used a colony of Vashta Narada with an unfortunate history of humanoid contact. So maybe the unfortunate history will be in the Fourth Doctor set, and then we get this one to round out that story. So
that sounds amazing.
I mean, we'll see. It's this one is being done by Matt Fitton, so that's a, you know, plus for it.
Yeah.
You know, I'm a fan of Matt Fitton, and of course the first part is done by John Dorney. So if anybody can do it, then perhaps they can. And the Sixth Doctor story is with the Rachnos. That's right, the Rachnos. So, I don't know. We'll see. I'm just, like I said, it's so another...
are there just three stories?
No, there's a fourth one that hasn't been announced yet.
Oh, they haven't announced it yet.
They haven't announced it yet.
So it'll probably be fifth or seventh, Doctor.
I would imagine so, I guess. I don't know. We'll see. Maybe they'll be sneaky and... Yeah, it's got to be a fifth or seventh.
Well, right? I don't know. They Classic could make Doctors. A third Doctor.
That's true. That is true.
They're doing the tree lore line or whatever.
With that is true. It could be a third Doctor. We'll see. Like I said, I'm still a bit iffy on the Vashta Narada, because I think they fall into the same category as Weeping Angels for me. And as I'm not exactly sure how they'll translate the audio, but we'll see. We will see. All right, so let's move on, and this takes us to Jeff territory. Why don't you tell us a little bit about 2017 Torchwood, Jeff?
I don't know what you mean by that being Jeff territory.
You're the only one here that cares.
I'm not sure that's entirely true. We do have some more Torchwood releases for 2017 that have been announced. The newest one to be announced will be released in March, and it is Torchwood Visiting Hours, starring Nerisse Hughes and Kai Owen, as Kai, of course, plays Reese Williams, and Nerisse Hughes plays his mother, Brenda. So that's interesting. They really are getting just about everyone that was on Torchwood to do one of these audios. But, yeah, so that'll be out in March, and that joins Torchwood Corpse Day, The Dollhouse, and coming out this month Before the Fall, as the stories that have been announced for this year so far.
And I think you'll want to keep an eye on the Big Finish website here, because the Scuttlebutt, based on some tweets issued by the line head James Goss, have indicated that we might be seeing Mr. Byrne Gorman come in to reprise Owen at some point in time in 2017 as well.
Oh, good. About time.
That seems to be what they are indicating in the, I think, most recent podcast as well, Big Finish Podcast. So be on the lookout for that announcement shortly. I'm sure we'll tell you about it soon. So moving from Torchwood, let's go to War Doctor. Ashley, we finally have some details about the fourth and final, well, maybe not final, but final for now, War Doctor set. Tell us a little bit about that.
We do. So we're, of course, we're going to have John Hurt again, and we're also going to have Louise Jameson. We've talked about this before, so this is going to be exciting. So the stories in this are going to be the casualties of war. And this comprises, it's called the Casualties of,
Casualties of War,
that's the box set, okay. And it's gonna have, Pretty Lies by Guy Adams, which, is a war reporter named, Shandell, and, may provide the key to their escape, but it is often said that the first casualty of war is the truth. When the choice between grim reality and a hero's story means life or death, will the Doctor allow Shandell to print the legend? So that's Joe Kloska is playing Shandell in that, and Mark Elstop is the editor, while Julia Hill plays Sarah. Okay, let's see. We also have The Lady of Obsidian by Andrew Smith. See the return of Leela as the Doctor seeks help from a shadowy guerrilla force when the Dalek strike fleet heads to destroy another defenseless world. And we have a Nick Briggs story by the Enigma Dimension. That sounds so Nick Briggy, so Briggsian. Is that a term, Briggsian?
It is now.
Yeah, so the Enigma Dimension. I love that. And that sounds so Time War-ish also. Nick Briggs and I have a very similar way of looking at Doctor Who, I think, sometimes. I'm waiting for someone to do the Horns of Peladon, which hopefully I'll get that. the Dalek time strategist has a new plan to ensure final victory in the war in the Time War. As its forces gather for a huge assault on the enemy, ahead of the fleet, something hovers above the planet of the Time Lords. And on Gallifrey itself, shadows move among the cloisters. So this sounds super fun. Shadows moving across the cloisters. Maybe Vashon and Arata. Maybe we're seeing something from that other thing. Could be interesting. That is that's really intriguing.
All right. Of course, that is out in February, so just about a month away, so be on the lookout for that. Also wanted to point out that if you haven't already, the short trip story Forever Fallen was released just after Christmas, about a week or two ago. It is free for downloads. You can go to the Big Finish website and download it. It is the winning story from the Paul Sprague Memorial Opportunity Contest, written by Joshua Wanisco. And this is a story about where the Doctor gives his speech about offering the mad genius and ready to take over the world a second chance, and they take it, and then what happens? It is a really, really cool story. It's probably my favorite short trip that I've listened to of the year. Of course, I've only listened to a couple of them, but it's certainly is my favorite. It takes it's over a span of 10 plus years as a Doctor continues to check in on this guy to see what is happening. And it's very, very much a Seventh Doctor-y type of story, and it's free. So everybody should be listening to it. Go get it.
Yeah. I have already listened to this and I thought it was terrific. Longtime listeners may remember that I've said more than once that I would really love a story where the Doctor offers, you know, whatever the antagonist is of the story, a way out, and they take it. And we finally have that story, and it is really good. It is interesting. It is touching. This is a story worth paying for, and you get it for free. So, yeah, go to bigfinish.com. If you don't already have an account, getting an account is easy, and this one is free anyway. Once you have it, you can either download it to your computer, or you can get the Big Finish app and listen to it that way. But, you know, it's worth 5 minutes of your time to sign up for an account just to get the story.
And I second everything Jeff just said, so go do it. You have no excuse. And Nick Briggs does an excellent job with it. He really does.
Yay, Briggsy.
All right, so let's move on from talking about what Big Finish is offering and talk a little bit about some award recognition for some Big Finish stories. Rachel, you want to give us a rundown on what Big Finish stories have been nominated?
So yeah, two Big Finish titles have been announced as finalists for the 2017 BBC Audio Drama Awards. So anyway, the first finalist was
As You Wish
Friends, by John Dorney, which we reviewed on the podcast a couple episodes ago, which is the opening episode of Doom Coalition Series 3. And then the second finalist is Torchwood More Than This, which is written by Guy Adams and starring Ev Miles.
Well, Absent Friends, of course, should win. Whatever it's been nominated against, I don't know. But Absent Friends is wonderful. I have no idea about More Than This. Jeff, was that a good Torchwood story?
Yeah, it actually is really good. It's probably the second, well, in my opinion, it's the second best from the first series of Torchwood. Fall to Earth being my choice as the best. So, you know, I'm a little disappointed that one wasn't nominated instead. But apparently they thought More Than This was better, and I'm not going to argue too much because it is a really good story.
Well, if they nominated Fall to Earth, then they might have to give Gareth some sandwiches, and they didn't want to, you know, pay for that. That'd be too much. Anyway. All right. Well, congratulations to Guy Adams and John Dorney for that recognition. Hopefully they win, especially that John Dorney story, because, boy, that was good. All right. There was tons of Big Finish released over the holidays.
Like the saying goes, it's an honor to be nominated.
Well, that is true. So I was saying there was tons of releases over the holidays from Big Finish. So too many for us to go over. Go check them out. Lots of good stuff like River Song and the Benny Short Trip was released and like all sorts of stuff. So go check out the new releases from Big Finish. They're all there. But let's move away from Big Finish for a moment, and let's talk about some book news. And we have some Amazon listings that have popped up for three new hardcovers coming out this April. Now, we don't have any details about story or anything yet. Only thing we know is they're out April 20th. And we know the title. So there is Plague City by Jonathan Morris. And then the next one is The Shining Man by Kevin Scott. And then the final one is Diamond Dogs by Mike Tucker. Mike does like his Bowie references. So as you recall, he wrote Loving the Alien. Now, no indication of which Doctor this is. If I had to guess, these will probably be 12th Doctor stories, maybe featuring Bill to kind of coincide with the new series coming on the screens this spring. So once we knew more information, we'll let you know. But like I said, if I had to guess, these will all be 12th Doctor stories. We haven't had a trilogy of books in a couple of years now. I think the last ones, I don't know, I guess maybe they only do it to coincide with the beginning of a new season, I guess. They have a tendency to like that, but I don't think they've had any since they did the one with Benny in them. So that's been a while. But they will be out this April in hardcover. We'll let you know more. And like I said, expect some 12th Doctor stories if I had to guess. All right, Ashley, let's talk some toys. That's your department.
Yes, it is. So this is an intriguing thing here. Now, I first heard about this about a year ago, actually, when I during Toy Fair or the UK Toy Fair or something. But Funko, the toy company Funko that does the pops and those kinds of things, the vinyl pops, and Playmobil have gotten together, and they are doing Doctor Who, 6-inch Doctor Who Playmobil figures. So your standard, like, Playmobil figures, and they're doing, except they're 6 inches, and they're doing an 11th Doctor and a 4th Doctor. They're also doing some other properties, including the Ghostbusters, Ninja Turtles, Back to the Future, Willy Wonka, things like that. But specifically, the 11th Doctor and 4th Doctor in Doctor Who, they are doing in the 6-inch scale for Playmobil figures. And it's really neat. It looks like they're going to run about 17 pounds, or about 8, I guess 18 pounds, actually. But I mean, that's the thing. You're looking at designer kind of figures that are going to be a low run. If you're interested in this, yeah, pick them up.
This seems insane to me.
It does.
I don't know who the audience for this is.
Well, you know, Playmobil, I never owned any Playmobil growing up because it's the generic toy. It's the kind of thing you see at the doctor's office when you're a little kid. You know, and I know that there are kids that actually have them at home. I've seen them in stores, but, you know, it's not something I or any of my friends ever had. You know, having some licensed property figures for it, it seems to me like it would be a good way to get it, you know, get kids wanting to have it, little kids wanting to have it more. But then these, A, aren't the same scale, so they're not the same size as other Playmobil figures, and B, they're super expensive, so they're really just collector
items. Well, this cost kills me. This, I agree. The cost is, this is the first time I've seen the price.
But I mean, for this price, I could get a well-sculpted, fully articulated, multiple points of articulation and accessories figure.
Yes, but here's the thing. Like, vinyl collectors and the people that collect that high-end vinyl kind of stuff, they love this stuff. You are not a vinyl collector. I'm not a vinyl collector.
And there's a nostalgia thing, too.
Yeah, because to some extent.
It's mixing up the nostalgia of these properties they enjoyed from their childhood, and they may have fond memories of playing with Playmobil. So it mixes up those two. So I can kind of get if there, you know, I understand these more than I understand the big headed pop figures.
I can't stand those. I call them the cockroaches of the toy industry.
they make a lot of people happy. I don't understand it at all.
Now Funko makes those as well. And again, it is something weird about these vinyl toy collectors. And I get it. I mean, I have a couple vinyl toys. I even have a couple of Funkos, Doctor Who related ones. But those people that collect those high end weird things, I'm in some Facebook groups with people that do that, and it's no big deal to them. A 17 pound or an 18 pound price tag on something like this, if it's something that appeals to them, they're gonna get it. I mean,
well, looking at what's available here, they're clearly being marketed towards people of our ages, so late 30s to early 40s, you know, because otherwise at least one of the Ghostbusters would be one of the new ones, for example. Instead, it looks like we have Venkman and Spengler, I think, or maybe Stans.
You can't even tell. it's generic.
They are pretty generic, but you know, it is Turtles, it's Back to the Future. Willy Wonka does cross age boundaries a bit more, I think. I was right. They're labeled. It's Stans and Venkman for the Turtles. And
Ghostbusters.
You know, you get the favorite classic Doctor, which is the Fourth Doctor, and the guy who was a new, you know, a Doctor from the new series the longest, which is the 11th Doctor. So, you know, it's they're pushing the nostalgia buttons. So I'm glad this is going to make some people happy. I don't want them. No interest.
I'll wait till they go on clearance.
Just so, watch. Just watch. These are going to be the next big thing. Next year, the comic book stores are going to be full of these.
Yeah, well, then I just won't
know, though. I mean, I like Funkos. I'll never turn one down if someone gives one to me, but I don't collect them, but I have a few. Well, I have a custom pair I got made for me and Kim because it's us as War Doctor in the moment. But that was like a special thing because they're just cute and I had a friend make them. But generally, not my thing. I got too much in the costume closet to deal with that's expensive. So I got different money problems. Y'all go collect your toys. It's fine.
Okay, well, let's move away from this oddity and let's talk about something that I'm super excited for. All right, Jeff,
did your voice just crack?
It might have. I don't know.
It did.
I'm super excited.
Oh my god, what is happening?
What we got here in the comics world, Jeff?
So yeah, Emperor the Daleks is a collection. Being put up from Panini Comics, and it is a Seventh Doctor story originally that appeared as the strip in Doctor Who magazine. It's going to have a bunch of brand new, you know, behind the scenes kind of material, bonus features, if you will, and you can order that on amazon.co.uk.
Oh, I've been waiting for this collection forever. Hopefully it has all of the mini strips in it. It should.
It's got some great names attached to it, that's for sure.
I wonder if it's going to have that prelude, the Sixth Doctor strip. It's like the prelude to the Emperor of the Daleks.
I would imagine so. I don't see why it wouldn't.
Yeah.
They've been pretty much collecting them in chronological order, pretty much. So, yeah, I mean, this so exciting. Got some great Lee Sullivan art. Also some art by John Ridgway in this. So two phenomenal artists, some great writers. Oh, so excited for this. I've wanted these to be collected for ages. And
when you've got some Benny in there too.
Well, yeah, I mean,
Benny was in the strip with him.
Right. So this should have all of the Benny strips in it. So this should have this Dalek story. Should have her Silurian story. Can't wait for it. Cannot wait for it. All right.
Emperor of the Daleks.
Yeah, and that's just a beautiful cover that they've got there. All right, well, so we're on comic news. Why don't we talk about the next story as well, Jeff, comic-wise?
All right, so if you watch the Christmas special, then you were introduced to the superhero The Ghost, and Titan is doing comic book stories with The Ghost that are appearing first digitally and then will appear in print. It's in my Comixology in basket, but I haven't purchased it yet. But I'm very much looking forward to it. So, yeah, there's not a lot I can say about it because I haven't read it yet. It's written by George Mann and written by Ivan George Mann, drawn Ivan Rodriguez. I'm so excited. I'm tongue-tied.
Yeah, I'll probably wait to get the physical copies. Just because I, you know, don't do digital all that much because I'm a Luddite. But, yeah, this might be pretty neat. I'm going to be honest. We'll take a quick divergent here. I expected to hate the Christmas special from all the previews. I thought I was just going to hate it. And yet I loved it. I thought it was a very, very cute little story.
Same here. I had low expectations and was thrilled by how it was handled.
Well, I just like the way that it handled the comic book references. That pleased me a lot. Mm-hmm. Was very, very, very. They had a lot of fun with it, and I just could not help myself but enjoy it.
It was like Doctor Who did Marvel. It was great.
Yeah, so, I mean, it was fun. I mean, just, like, lots of little comic references. I mean, if you grew up reading comics like I did, like, the Doctor having all those same thoughts that you used to have as a kid and the way they played it off in real life, it was a lot of fun. Just a lot of fun. It really was.
Well, I identified with the Ghost. You know, if I had swallowed a wish-making pill as a 8-year-old, that could have been me.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you there. That's all I was about it. It 8 years old. So, yeah, very much so. Yeah, it was a lot of fun. So I would like to read these. As far as having a nice little tie-in to the Christmas episode, this is what I'm looking forward to. Unlike the tie-in from that Time of the Doctor story, which I am not looking forward to ever revisiting. Anywho.
It was nice having a Christmas story that wasn't Christmassy.
Right.
It came out at Christmas, yes, but it wasn't a Christmas story, so I was good with that.
Okay. So let's move on, and we'll talk about one of Ashley's favorite subjects, which is we have, of course, a month wouldn't go by without having some Lethbridge Stewart's news put out on their WordPress site, of course. And this one is the announcement of Havoc Files 3. So, of course, if you will remember, they do like to put out their accompanying short stories to go with the releases, where if you buy directly from Candy Jar Books, you will get a bonus short story with your book purchase. And they are collecting the last year's worth of stories in this third volume. It's going to include the Bladoo Cadets and the Bald Man of Pengriffin by Tim Gambrell, The Last Duty by Crystal Bryant, Eve of the Fomorians by Robert Mamone, The Wishing Bazaar by Sharon Bidwell, The Feast of Evans by Simon A. Ford, Home for Christmas by The Author Collective, Slouching Toward Debt Sin by Sean Collins, and Lucy Wilson by Sue Hampton. And it also includes the second part of The Lost Skin by editor Andy Frankum Allen, which is the second part of their novella, which I believe started in the second collection there. So, and of course, these are limited, and once they sell out, they are gone, at least for the physical copy. So if you want one, be sure to go pre-order or get it as soon as it comes out, because once they're gone, they are gone. All right. So I've saved the best for last, and hopefully Ashley's back after spelunking into the room that he was in and evidently throwing aside every single box in that room. Let's talk a little bit about Doctor Who board game.
Didn't realize I wasn't muted.
Time of the Daleks. We talked a little bit about this last time around, but we have lots of new information. Gale Force 9 Games is doing a basically every week that goes by doing little showcases on little bits and parts of the game. So if you go to their website for Doctor Who, which is DoctorWho.gf9games.com, you can check out all of the pictures of all the wonderful cards and components that they've got out. They've got that first look that we talked about last month, but we've also got a focus on the first and 12th Doctors and the way that they work. We don't have a full rule set as of yet, but just looking at the components and things they put out so far, it looks like it is going to be a dice heavy game where the Doctor and companions that you have are going to grant you a kind of a dice pool, and then you travel across the universe and basically you complete adventures and face trials on different locations by rolling your dice and trying to match the symbols to defeat said monsters and enemies and things like that. The looks like every Doctor will start off with an accompanying companion. So, of course, the 12th Doctor has Clara, and the first Doctor will have Susan. And, of course, they give different bonuses depending on which Doctor they're with and things like that. There's also going to be a deck of cards which will include items. I think every Doctor starts off with a sonic screwdriver that gives them these little sonic tokens that they can use to pay for equipment and do things. And then, of course, there will be equipment like the 12th Doctor has his electric guitar, and there are jelly babies that you can do. And they give like different bonuses and different dice that you can use in the course of the game. every single bit they show about this makes me more and more excited. This week they talked about a little bit about how movement works, about how the basically whenever you move from planet to planet, you get to roll a TARDIS dice. And if you roll the TARDIS symbol, well, then you get to where you want to go. But if you roll the question mark, well, then the TARDIS takes you to a random location where the TARDIS thinks you need to be. So it kind of randomizes the way that Doctor can't always get to where he needs to go in the TARDIS, which I think is really, really cool. And you can see some of the locations, and it looks like there's going to be a random deck of enemies, and they get assigned to the locations that they're at, which kind of modify how you can solve the problem at that location. Looks really, really neat. I am so excited for it. I hope they give us a date soon, because I want it. I want it now.
I don't know how well it's going to look once it's in my hand, but the photos of the cards and dice and the miniatures just all look amazing. It looks really good.
Yes. Well, I mean, that's one thing that Gale Force 9 does is they are very well at their components and the way the games look. They almost have it to an art form. The Star Trek game they came up with this past year is beautiful to look at with all the little miniatures and the planets and components. And it looks like they're doing just as well, if not better, on this Doctor Who game.
It's not going to be cheap. It's a $75 game to start with.
I will pay for it. I don't mind.
It does look super fun.
Yeah.
I picked up another game that's unrelated to Doctor Who, but it is a Gale Force 9 game, and it's one of the new Dungeons and Dragons board games, and they were the ones that designed it, and even that is fantastic.
We should
great stuff.
We should put a link up on our Facebook page for the official website here for the board game.
I did that.
Check it out.
Yeah, I did it when they first started doing the releases back over the holidays. I haven't done any of the new ones, so I put up the 12th Doctor and the First Doctor showcases. Cool. Haven't done the more recent ones, but yeah, if you follow those links, you can get there. Oh, I'm so excited. Okay, enough about that. We've got so much to talk about still left tonight. We've spent a lot of time here on news, so let's wrap that up, and let's take a moment to reset, and we'll be back to talk about the next Virgin New Adventure, The Return of the Living Dad by Kate Orman.
Hello, this is Nick Briggs, the voice of the Daleks and executive producer of Big Finish Productions, and you're listening to The Oncoming Storm.
Hi, folks. You're probably wondering why I sound a tad bit different here from the last section. Well, that's because, as you will find out shortly, we had just a teensy little bit of some audio problems where, we started doing a recording, had a Skype call drop off, and it deleted the recordings we were doing. And I didn't find this out until I'm putting the episode together. So the whole section where I do the synopsis for the story we're talking about is gone. So here I am the day afterwards trying to do it and put it back into the podcast. So that's what we're doing. So without further ado then, I guess I'll just go ahead and we'll do a quick synopsis for our story of the evening, which is Return of the Living Dad by Kate Orman. It is the 53rd new adventure, and it was assembled with not just a little bit of help of Mr. Paul Cornell. You can see his influence in this book, almost where he could potentially have gotten a writer's credit, but he didn't actually do any of the writing. It was all done by Kate, but they hammered the story together, so I'm just mentioning that now. It may come up later, I don't remember. And in fact, if we refer to things from this first part later, I do apologize. I'm just doing the best I can here. So before we hit into spoiler territory, though, let's go ahead and read the back of the book just to give you an idea of what it is about. The back cover blurb says, "It's me, Daddy. It's Bernice." Bernice Summerfield was 7 years old when her father disappeared. They said he turned and ran from the Daleks in battle. They said he was a coward. They were wrong. For years, Benny has searched for her father. Now a clue snatches her from her honeymoon, back to the TARDIS, and on to England in the year 1983. There she at last discovers Admiral Isaac Summerfield, leading a motley crew of aliens, psychics, and fanboys. Their mission? To save extraterrestrials stranded on Earth. But what is Benny's father doing 500 years in his own past, and why has he been waiting for the Doctor to arrive? Can Benny really trust the man she's been looking for all of her life? So this features the Seventh Doctor, of course, with Chris and Roz as the companions, with a guest appearance by Bernice just a couple of months after she left in Happy Endings. It came out in August of 1996, which will be important later on as we discuss kind of the impetus behind Benny's role in this book. Now let's put on our spoiler glasses and get into the details of what exactly happens in Return of the Living Dead. So we start off with Benny and Jason on their honeymoon. Benny is there working on an archaeological dig. She is actually working towards her doctorate, so she can officially be known as a professor without having to have that caveat in place that it's a made-up degree. So she is there, and as she is on this dig, she runs into somebody who knew her father. There was another admiral who came up in the military along with her father, who says that she does not believe the stories about Benny's father, that he was not a coward, he would not have run away. And because she is a high-ranking admiral before she retired, she actually has one of the last recordings from the battle where Benny's father disappeared. And she gives it to Benny, and Benny then takes that and starts analyzing it profusely, trying to figure out exactly when and where this battle occurred so that maybe she can go back and find out what happened to him. So she does this, figures out where he's at, and then makes the call out to the doctor so he will take her back to find out what happened to her father. The doctor, Roz, and Chris, meanwhile, are on vacation, and on this vacation they're in Australia where the doctor is working in a hospice. He's kind of being the janitor there as he tries to come to understand like the human nature, the human condition, and dealing and helping these people who are dying. And as Roz says, he's just there to make himself feel better, perhaps. But he gets the call from Benny, and they go pick her and Jason up, and they take Benny back to the final moments of the battle. They land on her father's spaceship, and they find out that he was not running away. In fact, he was trying to lead a counterattack, but as he was trying to move around the Dalek forces to kind of catch them from behind, a big giant hole in space opened up and sucked the ship down into it. And so that's why it appeared he was running away, as he just disappears as he was speeding around to try to surround the Daleks. The Doctor and Benny quickly get back to the TARDIS to follow him, and they follow into the rift where they end up in 1983 in the little English village of Little Caldwell. And they quickly go and find out what's going on here, and it turns out that this is the base of operations for Benny's dad, Isaac, who has been there for 20 years. And he has set up a halfway house or underground railroad for aliens who are stuck on Earth. All the aliens that come and try to invade and get defeated, or they get left behind when the aliens retreat and whatnot. All those little bits of leftover aliens and things that get left after the Doctor defeats them and he goes off on his next adventure. Well, somebody has to deal with them, and because they don't quite like the idea of being like dissected by the government or by UNIT, they go underground, and then Isaac helps them get back to their home world. So that's what Isaac has been doing. And for years, they have all been afraid of the Doctor showing up because they're afraid of what they might do to him. But as we find out, this actually, the Doctor sees this as a good idea. He sees it as all those little details that he's missed or, you know, doesn't have time for. Somebody's been cleaning up after him. He's glad somebody is doing it because he'd much rather them get back home rather than to become victims of, you know, the zealous military forces and whatnot. So there's still kind of a tense situation between the Doctor and Isaac. They don't quite trust each other, even though they say that they're on their own side. They're on the same side, and Benny is kind of stuck in the middle. And so she is trying to get to know this man who was her father, who is 20 years older than what she remembers, and trying to tell him about her life and things like that. Meanwhile, Jason is feeling a little bit neglected because his honeymoon was interrupted to go do this, and so now not only does he have to contend with the Doctor, he's now also has to contend with Isaac. He feels a little bit left out, and he mysteriously goes missing. Benny doesn't notice it at first because she's caught up with what's going on with her father, but he's gone missing, and they don't know where he's at, and they go looking for him. They can't find him. Before things can go too much further, I mean, other things start cropping up. The doctor, who has been off investigating through the town and just kind of looking at things, he comes across a couple of different mysteries. One is there is this woman who is a ghost chaser who has come in from out of town, who's taken quite a fancy to the doctor, and they're trying to make sure that she doesn't find out about the alien things going on. There's also the actual ghost, who is a entity who is one picosecond trapped in the future. It was this a poor girl who ran across some time travel technology. It went off, trapping her 1 second in the future. So now she's got these basically like time powers where she is kind of like a wraith type thing. And she's kind of drawn the time travelers, and she can see their past and future and all different times in their lives. And the people she touches experiences that to different levels of harm and things like that. And so the doctor is trying to figure out what to do about this when he's planning to fix her by taking her back to the TARDIS, but then the TARDIS is also missing. They find out the TARDIS is gone. So we don't know what's going on here, and they're trying to track everything down when at one point in time, some black helicopters show up and start to take out one of the one of Isaac's comrades. Now, these black helicopters are after aliens, of course, but thanks to some timely intervention from Chris, he is able to get everybody away. They're following a car, and everybody gets away, but Chris, unfortunately, is captured. And he is taken back to their base. We find out that the ghost hunter woman that fancies the doctor, that he had had some couple of conversations with, whose name is Woodworth, she is actually in charge of this little organization, and they are kidnapping aliens, questioning them, getting information they can from them, and when they can't get anything else from them, they are dissecting them. And so even though Chris is saying that he's a human, he's been genetically modified enough to where they don't believe him, and after they won't get any information from him because he refuses to talk, they're getting ready to dissect him. And the doctor and Isaac lead a rescue mission though, and they find out after one of Isaac's helpers, the sentient spatula Alton bit of plastic by name of Graham, tells them where they're at, and it's actually in the same building where the doctor had been tortured by Hamlet Macbeth back in the 60s, back in the left-hand hummingbird. So it's a place the doctor does not like, but they were able to break in, shut everything down, rescue Chris, and they take Woodsworth captive, because they don't know what to do with her, but they shut down her little organization. They get there and they save Chris, and they're expecting to find the TARDIS and Jason, but lo and behold, they are not there, because it seems that this Woodsworth woman is not the real threat. We quickly find out a little bit later that one of Isaac's helpers, Isaac has a whole bunch of aliens that are helping him run this underground railroad, and one of them is a Navarino whose name is Albinex. Now, Albinex is supposedly helping everyone, but at one point, he ends up kidnapping the doctor. Actually, he doesn't actually kidnap the doctor. The doctor goes to him willingly once he's figured it out. And Albinex is an unusual Navarino. He wants Navarino to be a militant race and not just the bunch of intergalactic sightseers that they are. So he wants to basically get some material so we can go and take over his world. And he plans to do this by taking control of all of Earth's nuclear weaponry, holding the world hostage, and having them give him the things that he wants so that he can repair his own time ship, because his time ship is actually one of the reasons that Isaac is stuck back in the past. He was there in the battle. His ship got damaged at that point in time and created this little vortex that Isaac's ship was sucked into. So Albinex is torturing the doctor, and the doctor, of course, he can handle any sort of torture. He stands up and rejects it. Albinex has made a deal with the ghost because the doctor was not able to return her back to normal. Now Albinex is saying that he can do it, but he's got to get the information from the doctor first. So he talks the ghost into torturing the doctor for him and taking him back to all of his worst bits of torture and all the pain that he suffered. And the doctor is able to survive it, so much so that all the pain that the doctor is feeling, like, it's doing a damage on this ghost lady because she can't handle it. She doesn't know how the doctor can handle handle it. So they're not exactly sure how they're going to get the Doctor to give them these nuclear codes when Albinex changes up the bit of torture. And instead of causing the Doctor pain, he hits upon the idea of having the ghost track down the Doctor's happiest memory. And so she does so, and it is of a wonderful cup of tea the Doctor has had. And so what she does is she amplifies that memory 100 billion told, and causing the Doctor the utmost joy. And the Doctor, who has steeled his body for years to be able to withstand pain, cannot handle it. He cannot handle all of the pleasure that is being caused by this memory being amplified, and so he gives up the codes. And Albinex beats him up a little bit and then tosses him out into a lake. Luckily, Benny and Isaac have been able to track him down. They save him from the lake. Benny is able to get him warmed up by crawling into a sleeping bag with him naked. They bring his body temperature up, and they get him to recover. But the Doctor, who has realized that Albinex isn't working alone, he finally confronts Isaac. And yes, it seems this idea was all of Isaac's plan. He's been working towards it for 20 years, basically looking to get the nuclear code so he can start a nuclear war, thereby causing the weapons programs of the Earth to continue all the way into the future so that the Earth has a chance to fight off the Daleks when they invade, because he knows if time carries on as normal, the Daleks will invade and, like, decimate Earth. Now, the Doctor tries to point out just how bad of an idea this plan is, but it's kind of a moot point that he talks Isaac out of it, because Albinex is going rogue. He has decided that he is going to do it whether Isaac wants it or not, and we find out that Albinex actually is a double agent. He's been working with the Daleks, and so his idea now is to cause a nuclear war and then notify the Daleks so the Daleks can come and invade Earth early. So Isaac and all of his alien allies decide that they're going to help the Doctor. They want to protect the Earth, and so they help the Doctor go confront Albinex, and they take over Albinex's ship, and Albinex is about to launch the missiles, and they can't stop it, but what they can do is they send that missile up to destroy the Dalek satellite that is monitoring everything, and destroying that satellite, thereby the Daleks won't be notified of the war, and they'll just have to come and invade in the future rather than now. So, crisis averted. Isaac feels really bad for all of his plan that he was doing, but he kind of makes his peace with both Benny and the Doctor. And Benny, who has finally accepted that her father, her place with her father and the Doctor, and she goes back on her honeymoon to go finish getting her degree, and but now has the capability of coming back and visiting back with her father at any point in time. And so Jason and Benny go off, and then Chris and Roz, who have kind of been shacking up this whole story, unfortunately, they decide that they're probably just better off as friends, so they go back into the TARDIS with the Doctor before, and just as they're about to take off, the Doctor dashes off to give Benny a kiss goodbye as she goes back on her honeymoon with Jason. And that is the end of the book. So now we'll take you back to our regularly scheduled recording. So we do have the point from this point forward recorded. So I'll turn it back over to past Josh and past Ashley and Jeff and Rachel to pick up from here.
I don't know what happened.
Josh, was that everybody or just me?
It was all of us.
Okay.
Like, my screen just like went blank, and then the connection went away, and then it came right back up. It's weird.
Well, that's the basics of the book. So let's give our thoughts on it, guys. What did you make of Return of the Living Dad?
Well, for starters, it's a great title.
It is quite the humorous title. We will have to give it that.
I also liked, I was reading some behind-the-scenes stuff. I thought the alternate title was also hilarious, which was it Big Trouble in Little Shalon?
Little Caldwell.
Or Little Caldwell. Big Trouble in Little Caldwell. I thought that was also just terrific. But I am a dad, and those are dad jokes.
Very much so.
I like the return to the snazzy titles, for sure. Like the chapter titles. It's something I've gotten used to while I've been reading these books. And I was like, okay, now I know I'm reading a new Avengers book, because all these titles are just silly, and I love them.
I absolutely love this book. I always try to say when we're reading these books that, this one is the best to this point or whatever. this is, I think, the most well-written book that has been up to this point. I've said it before, and I think this one outdoes anything before. It's like reading a perfect stick of butter. It is perfect. I like the pacing is great. The it goes. I love this book. I love this.
Wow,
I like this book more than I like Nightshade.
I am amazed to hear you say that, Ashley. Like, what? I am flabbergasted. Never in a million years thought I'd hear that come out of your mouth, Ashley.
Everything about this book is everything I love. It's got spaceships, and it's got like intergalactic intrigue. Now it's brought down to Earth. It's got alien races. It doesn't have Civil War soldiers. It has. I love this book, man. It's just like I've read it before. I've read at least a good chunk of it before, and getting into it, like, I hate rereading books, but like as I was going through, I'm like, man, this. I feel like I was actually reading this book when we started the podcast, and then I like 5 years ago, and I when we started doing the podcast, I put it down to start where we were, and. I loved it then, although I feel like I've actually become a better reader in doing the podcast. But man, reading it now, I love this freaking book. I mean, this book is so much fun.
Wow.
So my rating's 5.
Okay, well, we got a lot to go before we get to that. So, I'm glad to know where you stand, though.
I have already recorded it for you, actually.
Well, I mean, you said you liked the title, Jeff. What did you like about the book itself, though?
Oh, it's a fun story. It is fun. It's intriguing. It's kind of sad the Doctor gets tortured again, but what an interesting way to torture him. And it's almost taking it literally, killing with kindness. You know, he doesn't quite die, but still, what an interesting way to torture someone, to get information from them by giving them too much pleasure.
Yeah, that is certainly different. it almost exemplifies this book, though. I mean, there's no doubt that this is a good book, I think. Kate Orman is an excellent writer. Her prose work is phenomenal. I just feel that this book lets me down a little bit. The big reuniting of Benny with her father is not epic enough to me. This book is very much about the characters, and it's very down homey after a fashion. And I feel like after having all these books of Benny being defined by her father having gone missing and left her an orphan after her mom died, that it just kind of is wrapped up so easily, and it feels like a letdown to me. And then you've got the fact that this book is just, it is almost pure sugar. There's no real, I mean, yeah, there's a threat, but the threat doesn't ever really feel like super bad. I mean, when you've got the fact
nuclear that war doesn't seem super bad,
but no, but I mean, this guy is it feels like the heart is not in it. Like, Isaac was directing it, his heart's not really in it. This Albinex is like, he's a joke. Like, yes, he gets the codes and starts. I mean, there's never really any like real threat feeling from him, though. He feels like a joke
it's funny you should say that, because I don't know why, but something about Albinex makes me think of Beep the Meep.
I mean, yeah, he just is not a very credible threat, I think. The fact that the book tells basically like two stories of threats. You've got the Woodsworth threat, and then you get the Albinex threat that kind of shows up. Like, it feels like, well, we've got we don't have enough here for one long book long thread. So let's just have two that kind of get stuck together. And it's just, I don't know what it is. The book just, it's a little bit too twee for me. Like it's too full of itself almost after a fashion. It's full of fandom references from the time period that are just, it probably doesn't bother you guys very much because you're not really familiar with it. Like you don't get all the references, but like every other page is a reference from the rec.arts.doctorwho time frame. And knowing that and knowing what the references are from, like it feels so smug. And like, look at all the references that we're making. Look at how cute we're being. And it's just, like the fact that the Doctor, like his biggest threat during the course of the book is that he's being made to feel too good. It just exemplifies what this book is. It's there like to, it's just too nice, I guess. Maybe that's what it is. It's too nice. It's just pure sugar. That's a little bit of a letdown for me, like after expecting Benny's dad to show up after the last time and finding out what happened, and this is what it is. It feels a little bit of a letdown to me. Not that the book isn't good, it's just, I don't know, there's little things about it that just niggle me as far as being not what, guess what I wanted. I don't know.
Well, I mean, this is a comedy. This book, everything about the book is, there are things about this, oh, I love it. I love it when they're like, well, my car is totaled and that car is too small, I guess we have to get the other one. And they come out in this gigantic van. It's amazing. Like, I was like laughing out loud when that came up, before it even came up. Like, I'm just like, I love the way that the segue, I actually thought it would be something different, but it came out and, oh man, it's funny. And the things that they do in this is just, it's a comedy. This is like the first book that I've been like, oh, I get it. You're being funny. Like, you're not just trying to like mimic Douglas Adams to be funny. You're like legitimately funny. You're like, this book was like speaking my language. You said it's fluff. Yeah, it is fluff. I love that. I love everything you described it as is everything I love this book for. It's not too hard. It's not too heavy. You can like get into a plot and then it finishes up. Then you get into another plot and it finishes up. Oh man, this is perfect. I love it. I'm not even saying anything of any substance, but man, this is a fun book. But I can see why you may not like it because you typically don't like things I like.
Well, that's not true whatsoever. I think
throw some Nymons in there and Peladon. This would have been the perfect book.
Oh my god. Good lord.
I mean. Well, your thoughts, Rachel, on the book as a whole.
This was a fun read. I felt like the prose in this one was kind of returned to form of what I personally like about New Adventures, and it's characterization. I felt like the characterization was really strong. The narrative standpoint, I liked where Benny sort of like would shift and back and she would tell stories. I kind of enjoyed that a lot. And then it's just kind of like her life after the Doctor and her reflecting on those sorts of things. And her life has kind of become more domestic, but it's not so domestic that it's like New Adventures companion domestic, I guess. Like she still has like weird things happening because she's a time traveler and an archaeologist. And Chris and Roz, like, hooking up, being weird. What?
Don't even get me started on that.
What is that? Okay. I'm like, okay, this is the domestic book, I guess, because it's like, okay, well, we got married, daddy issues, we got flings, we got babies in the future.
Well, Roz didn't get pregnant, did she? I mean, he usually gets someone pregnant and never stops.
Oh, God.
I mean, that's true. But like generally I loved Benny's inner monologue in this, and I think that's what makes Benny such an attractive character, is that she has all of these really great qualities where she's like super super tough, but then it's like she's got that Achilles heel, she's got that weak spot, and it, it's not like other characters' weak spots. Like, she still kind of can stand up even when she's down, I guess. I think that's what I enjoy about her as a character, and I felt like that really came through in this book.
I mean, don't get me wrong. I love all the Benny stuff in this book. Like, that's my favorite parts of it, I'd say. It's just, I mean, to kind of put things in a little context, of course, this came out in August. It would have been written, you know, shortly before then. And I believe it was in July when the editors sat down with a couple people like Paul Cornell and Lance Parkin and a couple of other people to basically say, okay, you know what? We're not getting the license back for Doctor Who. What are we going to do once that happens? And they're like, well, let's continue telling stories with Benny. So this kind of is a kind of a turning point for Benny. I mean, of course, it doesn't set up the line for Benny as of yet, but it kind of like emotionally caps out all of Benny's storylines and basically is her goodbye to the Doctor, even though she will see him multiple times over the next year before they finally separate permanently. But this is like her emotional goodbye. Like, this is her emotionally moving on. This is the wedding has happened and she's gone off. And of course, you know, you get caught up in all the craziness of the wedding and go off on your honeymoon. And there's not really a time to say goodbye or and wrap up those emotional threads. Here they get wrapped up. We finally get her to, you know, make peace with her dad and find him again. And she kind of comes to realize, like, her feelings for the Doctor in relationship with her dad, as far as, like, he's kind of was serving as a father figure for her. And now she's the whole point of her section of the book is kind of juggling, like, her lies between her real father and her father figure and the Doctor, and kind of like figuring out where they are in her own life and how she's going to relate to them and who she is to each of them. And my favorite part is, like, she's got like a wonderfully last line where she talks about what her name is now, which is after she gets her degree, she's Dr. Bernice Summerfield Kane, which is basically it's her name plus the names of the three people who are most important in her life. I think that's a wonderful line and kind of like summing up Benny at this point in time. And just the emotional impact of her realizing like who she is now, and she's not a companion any longer, even though she says, you know, once a companion, always a companion, but she's ready to move on and out from the Doctor's shadow. Like, I think this really does a good job in doing that for Benny. So I would say this for this book, like, it is excellent in that situation.
Yeah, so I agree. I mean, I think Benny, this is a great, almost swan song for Benny. And I love what it is.
I mean, really, this is the book, this gives her her happy ending. Like, she may have gotten married in a book called Happy Endings and gone off with her husband, but this is the one that actually gives her her happy ending. She's got her husband.
Ties up all of her.
Right. Ties up her. I mean, like, and we get to see, like, where all of her neuroses come from with the betrayal of the first man that she ever loved. And she, you know, tells that story to her father and helps her, you know, use that to, like, relate to him and his betrayal and things like that. And, you know, gives her her happy ending when she's finally got her doctorate. She's married and going off her own adventures. Like, if this had been Benny's last appearance, like, it would have been perfect, really, if it had ended here. Because, I mean, it wraps everything up and gives her her own sense of momentum to go off on her own life.
Yeah, it's I love it. Yeah.
But what I did not love is Chris and Roz. That bugs the crap out of me because it's such, number one, it's such a cliche to do, which they've avoided up to this point in time. And then they finally do it. And not only do it, but I can understand it from Chris's point of view, but for Roz to go along with it, like, just feels completely out of character for me, for Roz, and just to, and just to have it, like, she should have, like, completely shot him down and been her cynical, like, self, and had to deal with trying to, you know, let him down and still maintain the relationship, not go along with it. That just bugged the crap out of me. It really did.
It may not be a popular sentiment, but I'm ready to be done with Chris and Roz.
Well, I think in this case with Chris and Roz, I feel like they've been building up to that whole thing. It feels like it's part of it.
Well, I mean, like, it's certainly on Chris's end, I think, that's been building up to it. Like, he's, you know, been devoted to her and had a little crush on her. But, like, Roz is the cynical older cop who should know better, and yet, like, it just it falls into, like, a television trope almost to have them hook up.
Yeah, like, but she's also not in her environment anymore. She's been taken out of it. She's explored. We've found out that she's, over the course of the last books, her mind has been broadened. She's went from her very closed-minded racism to a much broader look on life. I feel like it's the next step. However, I do believe it's too soon. I feel like we haven't seen enough of that in her. And I mean, with what Jeff said, I kind of can see where you're coming from, Jeff. In that case, is they're beginning to stay around a little too long. I feel like, almost, for these two characters, at least.
I mean, I don't agree with that. I mean, like, I think Roz is a wonderful character. Like, she is this just ball of cynicism and wonderful. Like, she's the only one in this book standing around and commenting on how ridiculous everyone is. And rightly so, because, like, this little, like, too perfect situation, and Roz is just there, like, come on, guys. But then, like, she gets caught up on it. It's like, she should be the one standing up against it. And then she ends up getting caught up in it and giving into it, which I feel is a disservice to her, because she shouldn't.
I realize why you like Roz so much, because she is you.
I don't know.
Everyone else in the world is like, the Shazam universe. And you're like, oh, come on, guys. Come
That's
on.
Just stupid. That is just stupid. She's just, but I mean, like,
ever.
Roz is not a lovey-dovey type of person, and this has her acting way too lovey-dovey for what she is. Like, the relationship she had in Just War with George felt very real to Roz. She was, to me, for Roz, she was standoffish. She was dismissive of him, and I mean, like, he kind of wins her over there at the end. But Chris is her partner. Chris is someone that she's been working with and been professional with all this time. It just bugs me for it to go in that direction. I don't know. I didn't like that viewpoint. Like, I like Roz to just be herself, and just, like, the fact that there's a point in time where Roz has had a chunk bitten out of her neck, she's bleeding profusely, and you know, they've been in a fight of her life, and then all of a sudden she just starts, like, making out hot and heavy with Chris. I mean, come on. That was ridiculous to me.
I mean, it happens, right? Like, sometimes. Generally. Sorry.
It just shouldn't happen here. It just
it usually only happens in a screening of Horns of Nymon. But, you know, but yeah, I mean, I can see your point. I can see your point.
It's just, I don't know. I want to move on from that.
Okay. Well, moving on. Let's talk about the Doctor. In this, because I actually like what Rachel, that's her name, yeah, said about Benny. in terms of the characterization and what we get with Benny there. I love what they do with the Doctor here. They give the Doctor a weakness, and that weakness is the fear that people fear him. And I find that fascinating.
Yeah, I mean, I thought the Doctor comes off pretty good in this story, though I think it's probably a little bit too much, like, seeing from the Doctor's point of view rather than having him, you know, serve as, like, other people making those observations rather than the Doctor just kind of telling his first person. Like, I like the idea here that the Doctor just doesn't understand the way that humanity is romantic with each other and has these feelings. And it almost is overdone where he's talking about, like, well, why did he kiss her and things like that. Like, I mean, that's it's kind of a stupid question to ask. I mean, I like the idea. It was a little bit taken a little bit too far, maybe.
Well, but there's one part where Benny's like, don't you remember, you know, referencing human nature. And he's like, well, yeah, I remember being a human, but I still don't understand it.
Right.
Which I think goes back. That is kind of the embodiment of that character.
No, I agree. I like that. I like that a lot.
So I don't know. I find that very fascinating. And this idea that even though he doesn't understand, I guess, human nature, what he does understand is he understands that he doesn't like people fearing him. He doesn't want to cause fear. He doesn't want, like, when the aliens, like, see him and they literally, like, start shaking in fear because of his reputation, not even what they know to be true, but what they've heard of him, the rumors they've heard about him. And he starts questioning himself. He starts questioning his nature. He starts questioning the things he does. And I find that to be a very human trait, if you will. So I don't know that I find that both concepts are in the same book. Fascinating.
Yeah. I mean, I'm kind of on the opposite side. Like I think the, him trying to understand the human feelings to me the more interesting aspect of this, and for him to at the end you know, finally go in and give Benny that kiss, whether he is actually come to any sort of understanding or if he's just kind of doing it because he thinks that's what he's supposed to do, is an address, which I think is perfect for the Doctor. I also really like the fact that the first time that we see the Doctor in the story, like, he's working like a janitor in a hospice, he tells Chris and Roz about one of the women that he met there that ended up dying, that he didn't get a chance to say goodbye to, and how he doesn't quite understand where her attitude on life comes from and things like that. Like, that's one of the neat things in the new adventures, as far as their examination with the Seventh Doctor. Like, this is something that is really only feels like it fits the Seventh Doctor, like, perfectly, that type of introspective and that kind of action where he's there doing this. And like Ross says, well, you're just doing it to make yourself feel better, which he probably is. Even though he's also struggling to try to understand and seeing the alien nature of him, even though he is interacting with humans all the time, and to see that divide still there. Like I really like, I mean, it makes him an alien, and I like the Doctor when he has that alienness to him and not when he's kissing companions.
Well, you know, he is half human.
Oh, well. Ever since then, he can't get enough of it.
Story, as revealed in the story where he kissed a companion.
This also is the story where he changes into his TV movie outfit. He threw that in there.
Oh, that's what that is. Yeah, I noticed that, but I didn't think about what that meant. Yes, it is.
Yep.
Now, are they already in the TV movie control room at this point, or console room?
No, that doesn't happen until Longborough.
Oh, okay.
So I was kind of disappointed at the reunion with Isaac because it didn't feel epic enough for me for all the buildup that we've had over all these books. But obviously it worked for seemingly everybody else. Thoughts on that?
Well, you have more history with that. I'm not sure I've ever even encountered the name of Benny's father before. So it didn't have, I didn't have the expectation going into it that you did. I was a little surprised that she kind of, you know, she forgives him for his horrendous nuclear war plan pretty easily. You know, he does change his mind, but still, he's been working on this plan for 20 years and it was not a good plan. And she seems to get over that pretty easily. But, you know, I guess she's just really glad to have her dad back.
I just imagined him as Major Dad.
Oh, Gerald McRaney?
Yeah, like the entire time. Every time I read him in his voice. So
I wish I had.
Well, think about it. I mean, it actually, when you think about it, it works really well as him. For me, it did. So it was fun.
I mean, I don't have a problem with like the characterization of Isaac. Like I think he's there, you know, and the way that the story is set up so that he is, you know, directly contrasted with the doctor, basically kind of showing the two different aspects of Benny's personality and her life. That, you know, dichotomy works. It's just, it feels like, again, I guess if I'm letting myself think about like the big epic plot lines rather than the characters, like, here's what I was ready for, a big epic plot. Like, why was he gone? Why did he disappear? Why did he never come back? What was he off doing? And like, oh, he's been sitting in a little English village for 20 years. It just feels like a letdown from all of those thoughts. But from what is done with it, like, it works well enough, like, at least thematically for Benny's story. So I guess I can't complain too much. Now, the tone of the book, like I said, I mentioned before, kind of bugs me because it feels very, very smug. It's also very metatextual. You know, so many continuity references and then like sly remarks to those continuity references, like effing unit dating gets mentioned multiple times. One time is cute, second time is annoying, just got to keep going into that well. It was just that tone, I think, is probably my biggest issue with the book. I mean, am I thinking of it too hard? I mean, like, yes, obviously, I'm more inclined to get the references because I'm from this time period of a fandom. But I mean, what did you guys make of it? I mean, is that tone evident, or is it only evident to like an old fogey like me?
Well, as I was researching the book today, you know, I was going through and clicking. Oh, so this is a reference. Let me read what that's about. And this is a reference. Let me read what that's about. So I didn't get all the references while I was reading it, but afterwards, as I'm, you know, as I'm looking up to learn more about the book, I'm like, oh, okay, this and this and this is all from old, you know, older stuff. And it adds flavor to the book. You know, I didn't find it distracting because I didn't know that it was a reference ahead of time, although I shouldn't be surprised.
Yeah, well, I mean, like, just about everything in the book is a reference, whether it be names of her friends or people she knows online, or, you know, all the references, different stories are coming from online discussions and arguments that they're all having. It's just, it's too much. I mean, we mentioned a little bit about like the overloading references when we talked about happy endings, but I mean, that was the anniversary and it was the way the book was set up. Like it was one of those throw everything in but the kitchen sink anniversary stories that we've come to expect from Doctor Who. So it works there well enough. I think here it feels like it is being overdone.
I here's the thing though. I think this was written to be a sequel to Happy Ending.
Well, I mean,
it is.
Yeah, I mean, it really is. So almost that pulls over. Now, the tone is different. Paul Cornell is a very equally, I think they're both very good writers. but the tone might come over a little differently. But I feel like it's they place really well next to each other, and they feel very similar. They read very similarly as well. They're both super fun in a similar way. So in that respect, I can almost let it go, because you could almost read this one right after Happy Endings and not miss a beat.
I don't know. I mean, just Happy Endings feels like it's being done as a celebratory type of nature in that story. Here, it just feels like it's being done to be, you know, haha, look at me, look how cute I'm being.
Yeah, maybe, but I feel like this is equally as celebratory, but celebratory in a different way. At this point, this is the celebratory when you are, you've put in your 2-week notice at a job. And you're just like you're like celebrating your way out the door. It's celebratory, like a lame duck president. It's celebratory in that respect. Like you already said, they were already knew the license was gone. So they're like, let's celebrate while we can and get at like tie up all the other loose ends. And I think her dad is a huge loose end. And at this point, Benny's become a very popular character. So it's celebratory within the character, celebratory within the line.
I mean, and that's fine. Like, if you write the book that way, then that's fine. Like, you can celebrate Benny, and then the story in itself is fine as far as, like, celebrating and what Benny's doing, what she's learning, what she's there to do. But it's the extra layer on top of all of the smug references and remarks to the people and things online that just it takes it from being a nice celebratory story of Benny to this is me celebrating me and all of my online friends in 1996.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, yes, I'm not going to argue that point. And there are probably things that I don't get from that, even though I was kind of involved with it at that point. But at the same time, I don't know. It's easy enough.
There's just a sense of, look, this is a story about me and my friends. We're all like all these random people who from different backgrounds who've got together online. And then there's all the people from the outside who don't understand us and they want to shut us down. Just that – I don't know what it is. It's just – this is – all of her other books don't seem to have this tone. Even though she's got references in her other books to you know, people and things from online, this one just – I feel like it just – overdoes it for me. It's just, it crosses that line from cute to smug.
Well, here's the thing about this book compared to her other books, specifically what is it, the Mockingbird book,
Left-handed Hummingbird.
Left-handed Hummingbird. This one, the tone of this book is like so much more fun, where you get some of these authors that just like maintain the tones of their books. Now obviously there are elements from that book in this book. But you get authors, Cornell, for instance, Cartmell, you know, he has that same tone that goes through those three books he does. This book, she was able to really jump away from that tone. Like, as I recall, going through that Left-Handed Hummingbird, that book was incredibly hard to read for me, because of certain elements in it that I'm just not a big fan of. This book, I guess I'm not really answering your question there, but this book compared to her other books is just so much more fun and easy to read in that respect. But yes, I guess it could get bogged down in things and probably things that I didn't notice. I did notice a lot of the Doctor Who stuff, the unit dating, for instance, and there's a lot of very obvious Doctor Who things that are happening on the top of it. But I guess I just wouldn't have known the kind of inside stuff.
But I mean, it's just, I mean, even without the inside, like the tone itself, like there are several points in time in the novel where she's referencing like some really like serious things, like the child abuse, or like that one lady whose child was in utero was aborted because of the doctor's psychic unleashing in Left-Handed Hummingbird, and she, you know, pulls a gun on the doctor and threatens to kill him. But that is just it gets a reference and it's like quickly swept under the rug for the next bit of sugary bitness that she's got to throw another reference or another like in joke. And it just, it stands out to me when she does that, which it doesn't make much sense. I don't know. Like, I think those were all good things to look at, like examining like how Jason feels being back at this point in time with, you know, where he could go and visit his abusive father and potentially stop him from heaping the abuse on his family, or, you know, the serious repercussions that happens when the, you know, the people who are involved in Doctor's adventures, not like they're actively involved, like they're innocent bystanders, and the way that those get affected. Like, I think those are all good things to look at, like in a Doctor Who story, but she touches on them and then immediately moves past it for like the next little cute scene.
And you know what? That's exactly what I love about it. The fact that we don't have to just like ponder on it. It's brought up. We can kind of think about it for a second. And then walk on. We don't need 40 pages worth of backstory or you know, lamentations when we can do it in 2 pages and then have another bit of, like, happiness.
Yes, because heaven forbid, like, you actually stop and consider, like, serious bits of nature when you could just give out candy floss.
But you still can. The idea is you can have both. You can have your cake and eat it too in this case, because you can sit and you can think about that.
There is no cake and eating it too. It's all cake. It is all cake, and there's absolutely no sort of substance.
The serious stuff is in there. It's just not pondered on.
But it's not given any substance.
It has all the substance that it needs. You do not need.
Disagree.
Oh, this is a great way to start this year, Josh. I'm so excited right now. it's like going back in time. This is like the perfect way to do it, because you don't have to sit and go through all the dark and dreary. You can like go through and be like, hey, it's kind of dark.
It doesn't have to be dark and dreary. You can actually focus on it and what it actually means.
You're talking about aborted babies and people losing their planets and things exploding and dying. You can't, it always is. Like, if Paul Cornell was writing this, it would drag on. If Cartmell was writing it, man, he would spend the whole book on that and then be like, oh yeah, and this good thing happened.
Like, but the thing is, like, you can't bring up something like that and then like have the Doctor just move on past it without like giving it any sort of real substance.
But
that's what my problem is. Like, it should really affect him. Like, he just stop and think about it.
It does. The idea
but
it is
it doesn't give. It. It's not giving the weight that it should be.
But he's not human. He's not going to be affected by it the same way. The idea is he like it's. I think that scene where the lady like pulls the gun on him is wonderful, because she only wanted him to feel it, and he like as soon as he like admits it, she doesn't have to see him cry. She's like, you know what? I did that to you. That's worse than killing you will ever be. So she walks away. That's all that we have to see. I can understand the point. Okay, maybe we should have a little bit more. The Doctor should kind of come back to that.
I mean, that's all I'm asking for. Not just throw in like the third unit dating joke immediately afterwards. Like, give us a little bit of, you know, substance to. I mean, because once we're past it, like it's forgotten about. Like, it's not brought up again. The Doctor doesn't seem to have any impact. Like, there's absolutely. No real change in the story on any of our characters.
The entire book is that for him. Like, the entire book is taking that same thing. It's like, look, the actions that I make affect people. Like, I make these actions, I take these actions, and people are affected by it. And I can usually, like, everything that happens to the Doctor brings him back to that point.
I know, and that's what the point that he should come to. But I don't think that it's really giving a focus. The focus seems to be, oh, I really should stop and think about, like, all the aliens that get left on this planet. And I should make sure they get home rather than just going off my next adventure. That's the way that it... Like, the ending of the book presents, like, that's what the Doctor thinks about. Not, like, whether, oh, I could, like, realistically, by no fault of my own or just because I'm doing something, like, irrevocably change somebody's life.
But, see, that's not the fault of the book or the writer. That's the fault of it being a series of a property you can't really change. I mean, you can't have that ongoing. You can't change the Doctor like that in a book like this. Like,
why
maybe
not?
You should be able
why can't you?
But we haven't. Like, the Doctor's character doesn't change in this book line. I mean, it does from book to book.
That's BS. Are you telling me that the Doctor's outlook does not change in this book line? Are you kidding me? You have read 53 books where the Doctor has gone from way he was in the TV movie to being this master manipulator ass to kind of coming along to being this old, weary, like understanding type of guy that he shows up as in the TV movie. Don't.
But it just depends on which author is writing it. We've talked about this. It goes like you might have like that Doctor in one, then you might have the season 27 Doctor in the next. Like it goes back and forth. Like it's not consistent. I mean,
look,
yes,
I mean,
you can.
It's not
that
consistent on TV either, but you can still see that there have been changes made.
I mean, yes,
like,
I mean,
a long term, like especially when you're dealing with the core set of writers in this line, like, there have been a character change for the Doctor.
There's nowhere for that character. That's a concept really that should have been taking place over the course of several books and not just one book.
Well,
because then you're handing it over to the next.
And run. Then, you know, we're going to get ahead of ourselves here, but when we touch back on this, when Kate writes The Room with No Doors, don't tell me that she could not have done some of that more in this book, because it all gets done in The Room with No Doors.
Sure. I mean, I don't disagree with that, and I haven't read that one, so I can't speak to that. But, I mean, there's definitely things that can be done. I love the concept. And I get what you're saying. I get that there's more that could have been done. I completely agree with that. But all I'm saying is that I like a book. I feel like this finally is one that it's just like, I don't feel like I have to go like breathe into a bag after I read one of these dark, depressing segments and consider suicide. and then I get to just like turn the page and be like, oh, something fun's happening. Like they're jumping into a van and running out of a barn. It's super fun, and I don't have to ponder on like a crazy drug use or someone killing themselves before they were born or turning into a dog or something like that.
All I'm saying is that there is a way to do those things without being uber depressing.
Okay.
And right. not being completely swept under the rug for the next bit of tweet.
Let's just say there's
setup.
There's a happy medium between the two. I'll give you that.
All right, then.
Oh, I missed this. I missed it so much. This is going to be a good year, Josh. I'm back. Maybe.
Jeff and Rachel, anything else you guys want to talk about now that we're done with our ranting and raving on this?
I think you two have used all the words.
Yeah, I think I'm good.
Oh, we haven't used all the words. But
well, all the words that we can use and keep our not explicit rating.
We all right, well, for song episodes, it's fine. That's coming.
Well, I think I'm returned to living dadded out. So unless you guys have anything else, I'm ready to rate it.
All right, well, what are you gonna call it?
You wanna start with me? I'm gonna give it a 3.5.
Wow,
that's fair.
Because I think it's a good – I think it is – it's certainly well written. Kate Orman knows what she's doing. I like what she does with Benny. I like where Benny ends up. I like the commentary and relationship between Benny and her dad and the Doctor. All that – the core of the book is good. I just think that she goes off – like this could have been like a super excellent book. It gets Benny to where I want her to go. Like it has a lot of great things to say about Benny and her relationship with the men in her life. I like everything that it does with her. It's just all those extra bits on top of it that just ruin it for me. And that Chris and Ross stuff is ridiculous.
I'm also giving it a 3.5. So – above average, but not perfect.
I'm going to rate it slightly higher. I'm going to give it a 4, just because I think, like, it gives Benny the perfect ending. Like, that, the last page alone is just perfect writing, so.
I agree with you.
In having the conversation, I'm going to pull my rating down a little bit.
Yeah, but, all right. Work here is done.
I think it's a fantastic book. I'm still going to give it a 4.5. I love this book. Like I said, it is like reading a fine butter. As I was reading it, that is exactly what I thought about. It was like perfect. Like the knife cuts right through it. Oh man, it is perfect. And I love it for that. I always put everything up against Nightshade. I love Nightshade. And I think it's a very different book from Nightshade. And I'm not even going to say it's better. I'm not going to say Nightshade's better. I think this goes at the same level for me. It hits a lot of the things that I like in fiction. It doesn't ponder on elements that I don't like in fiction. So it was like this book was written for me. Which is odd because very rarely is anything written for me. But I don't have to get too dark in things. I don't have to go, you know, as soon as it gets a little uncomfortable, I can have a laugh. It's super fun. So that's why I like it. It hits a lot of my buttons there.
All right, well, before we move on, I'm going to go to the Keeper of Records here. And Jeff has actually rated any other book we've talked about a 4.5 or higher.
Oh gosh, I would have to go into that.
Oh, you don't have that available. No problem.
No problem. I was just wondering. This is a new year, so I started a new one.
I was going to try to.
I've rated audience that high. If we were doing ratings, I would have rated. I'm pretty sure I would have at the time rated Nightshade a 5.
Yeah, that's what I was wondering if there was anything else up there so I could try.
He did give Happy Endings a 4.5.
Super good. And like I said, this is a sequel to that.
He gave the Also People a 4.5.
Well, that one's justified.
And yeah, those were his highest scores in 2016.
Interesting.
For books.
Fair enough. All right.
And like I said, Nightshade would have been a 5 for me. I mean, I'm really having a hard time not rating this one a 5. Like, I'm really.
If you want to give it a 5, give it a 5.
I know. I really. You know what? I'm going to do it. I'm going to give it a 5.
Pull the trigger.
I enjoyed this dang book.
Yeah!
You enjoyed
it.
Do it,
Doug.
I'll give it a 5.
All right. Done.
Woo! Living dangerously in the Doctor Who universe.
I'll probably have like a knife pulled on me at Wholanta this year by Justin.
Oh, please.
So much fun.
Like, remember when you rated that book a 5? You gave the Also People a 4.5? Well, this is for you. I'll get a shiv in my ribs.
These are for you.
Can we just, like, have, like, a scrap panel where we just, like, fight the whole
thing? I want to, and I want to record it. I think it would be amazing. I want to take one of our most controversial books or audios and do the show that we did live and just, like, go for it. And just like hit all the points, and just we'll just start slapping each other, like not even hitting. I'm talking like cat fight. I really want to do it. I want to do like have that do it like a boxing poster outside the door that's like Wilson versus Rayburn.
Hey man, you're the one that sets everything up. So
I know. I think I might do it. I think we might do Wilson versus Rayburn. And everyone will just side with you because you're the logical one. I just say stupid stuff.
All right.
I get it.
So we're done. That's enough. Go back to your corners, Ashley.
Man, I feel so good right now.
We'll do it again next month.
All right. Maybe. What is the next month?
And speaking of next month, we actually take a sidestep from the new adventures because the next in the timeline for the Seventh Doctor is Cold Fusion.
What's our next new adventure?
The next new adventure after that is, I think, the Death of Art.
So when do we get to the Russell T. Davies book?
That will be the month after the Death of Art. So that would be.
See, I'm sure. I'm pretty certain I'm going to give that one a high rating too.
So, having not
read it, but.
But next month is Cold Fusion by Lance Parkin, which means we will be doing a kind of dual review. Next month, we'll be talking about not just the book, but also the audio adaptation that came out a couple of weeks ago. So,
that means I have to listen and read something.
That's right.
Oh, no.
Is the poor podcast reviewer having a hard time?
Yes. Yes, I am.
Okay, so that is in a month's time, and then in 2 weeks, does everybody remember their audio selections?
Yes. Yeah. My selection will be Cuddlesome with Peter Davison's Fifth Doctor.
And what's yours going to be, Ashley?
Well, I will not be here. I will be in San Francisco, so I don't think I will be...
Careful.
Yeah, I know. Hopefully I don't get shot when I walk out of my police box.
Pay the $20 for the Skype at the hotel.
I won't be there. I'll be in the air while you guys are podcasting, or I will have just gotten there, so it doesn't work out. My next pick is The Bride of Peladon, though.
Well, okay.
Boo.
I'm keeping with it, man. We're going to hit every Ice Warrior story.
I'm booing the fact that you won't be here, not that you've picked a story.
Oh, okay. Well,
anyway.
It was hard to tell.
My pick will be Project Destiny, the big conclusion to the Project stories from Kevin Scott and Mark Wright. And then, Rachel, what's the next up on the Eighth Doctor list?
Yeah, it's the third story in Doom Coalition 3, which is the Doomsday Chronometer.
All right. Come on,
words. Words are hard.
So that's in 2 weeks. We'll see everybody then. Thank you all for joining us. And, of course, thank all my hosts for being here, even if they do tend to argue with me sometimes. But I do love them nonetheless. I'm talking about you, Ashley.
Yes, of course.
So we'll see everybody in 2 weeks. Well, till then, take care, everybody.
Well, first of all, let's tell them how they can get in touch.
Oh, you know, it's been so long since we've done it. I actually skipped over your part. I wanted you to shut up, so I just skipped right over you, Ashley.
Yeah. So if you would like to talk to us about this story or any story we've talked about in the past or would talk about in the future, specifically this story, if you want to tell me I'm right, you can give us an email at theoncomingstormpodcast@gmail.com. You can also find us on Twitter. You can find Josh at @TheOncomingJosh, and you can find me at Izlear. That's Izlear. Skip, come on, tell us how wrong Josh is on this one, or maybe you agree with him. That would be great, too. We've been having some great conversations on Twitter with Skip and some other guys. We are also on Facebook. You can find us at facebook.com/TheOncomingStormPodcast. Lots of conversation going on there. And finally, you can find us on iTunes, and we would love for you to give us a rating there if that is where you downloaded it from.
All right. Is that everything, Ashley?
I think so.
Okay. So in that case, then... we'll see everybody in 2 weeks, so take care.
We'll see you soon.
Bye.
Happy New Year, everyone.
You have been listening to The Oncoming Storm, a Doctor Who spin-off media podcast. All thoughts and opinions are solely those of the host and do not represent those of Mad Norwegian Press, the Timegate Convention, or any other organizations they manage to worm their way into. Contact us at theoncomingstormpodcast@gmail.com or through Facebook. Be sure to like our page on Facebook to get all of the latest information on the show. Get new episodes through iTunes or at our website, www.theoncomingstorm.libsyn.com.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network, your station for all things geek, classic, current, and beyond. Be part of the crew at esonetwork.com.